So hi and welcome to this week's CV Focus podcast for ITTHub.net. In the previous podcast, we've seemed to focus on the OEMs, the hardware suppliers, but we've got to have a sort of a change of mood, really, I suppose. We're going to talk to operators. We really want to talk to operators of notoriety and other big players, and we thought, well, a good one to chat to would be Bibby Distribution. Now, joining me today is Adam Pershall, who's their Fleet Procurement Director. Hi, Adam, you okay?
Yes, good morning, and very good, thank you.
Obviously, we're living in very, very strange times at the minute, Adam, and I'm sure you'll agree. And I suppose from CV Focus perspective, I'm just interested in how Bibby's dealing with it. You know, how's business changed, better for worse or indifferent?
I think it's fair to say it's been a challenging year for us all. I think we were talking the other day, and it's probably been the most challenging year that people have had in their careers. But it's definitely prompted lots of change. It feels like a long time ago, but early part of this year we were sitting down and talking about potential impact that COVID could have, and I don't think anybody could have expected the impact that it has had. But we've been very fortunate. And we've certainly had to adapt, change how we do things. It is certainly accelerating change and forces you to look at digitization of processes and ways of doing things differently, and probably accelerates a lot of that change that potentially we had planned anyway. Yeah. And we're quite fortunate that we've come through it really strong. We've been extremely busy. We have a good mix of customers and kind of sectors that we operate in that are very kind of buoyant, and actually have been quite fortunate that we've seen volumes increase during COVID for us. So in a good place as a business.
I think it's, as you say, I think it's a really sort of poignant what you said there. I mean, it's forced a lot of change, hasn't it? It's really made people think about the, from an operational angle, are we doing it the right way? If not, how can we improve? I mean, I know some sectors, unfortunately, have slowed down, but it does seem to be that realistically people, particularly I think the last mile part of distribution as well in logistics, has really, really been focused on that. And then I suppose from a Bibby Distribution perspective, I mean, you're very much long-haul, line-haul type of business. But what about, I mean, sort of future technologies? I mean, where are you with that? I mean, obviously, we're seeing quite a lot of electromobility entering the market. I mean, obviously, is that something up for consideration in your business?
It's definitely more difficult from a vehicle perspective with our business. Clearly, we're primarily long haul distance, primarily at the heavy end of the sector. So the bulk of our fleet is 44 ton, and we do run a range of vehicles throughout all of that. Yeah. And clearly, at that high end, high mileage, high weight end, the options are more limited. But I think it's definitely changing. The world is definitely accelerating. There's very much a push from environmental benefits. And we're very closely watching the market, very closely looking at opportunities around gas. Electric is definitely accelerating very rapidly, but is more suited to the lower end of the market in terms of weight.
And I know you've got some good news, really, I suppose. I mean, I do know, having sort of just done a little bit of research before we started speaking, I mean, obviously 2020 has been a big year for Bibby Distribution with investment, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've had a phenomenal year from an investment perspective. We've invested over £14 million in fleet alone this year. And that's very much been driven by a desire to want to embrace the latest technology, the latest vehicles, the latest emission standards. And we've been fortunate that through demand, some new contracts, some new business wins, we've been able to continue our investment program. And it's a journey that we've been on for a few years now, and has accelerated and is absolutely continuing into 2021 with some investments already committed for next year as well. So it's been a really successful year from that perspective.
It sounds like a very expensive year. I mean, £14 million, I mean, it's not to be sniffed at, is it, really?
No, absolutely. You know, we are determined it's the right thing to do. We have to keep investing. We've got to be at the forefront of technology. We've got to try and support our colleagues. We've got to try and make sure that we're giving the best service to our customers. And part of that is absolutely investing in the latest technology that's going to help us deliver that and maintain that, our service levels.
And I suppose using diesel as a common platform, you know, I mean, obviously you'd be investing in the most green and efficient, I suppose, diesel solutions you can possibly get your hands on. I mean, obviously, CO2 is a big thing, and I mean, the only way to reduce CO2 is to burn less diesel. And I mean, obviously, that has an impact on one, the equipment you buy, but also, I suppose, the drivers play a key part in that as well, don't they?
They do, absolutely. You know, from an environmental CO2 emissions and sustainability perspective, it's clearly one of our vital business goals. And it's something that we track very closely. We are fortunate that our investment program has meant that we have a fully Euro 6 fleet. But even within that, the various iterations of the Euro emission standards, we're seeing that the very latest Euro 6D standard, which came in at the beginning of 2020, is again kind of providing another iteration of savings and benefits, and is becoming even more fuel efficient. So we're absolutely committed to that program, and as you say, the driver has a huge impact in that, and is absolutely critical that we can give the relevant training, support, guidance to ensure that drivers are getting the best out of the vehicles and making them as efficient as possible.
I think it's quite telling, though, don't you think, Adam, that the you know, these vehicles now, you know, you can't find a bad truck, particularly when you're looking at the heavier end. I mean, there's no bad trucks out there anyway, but when you are focusing your purchasing efforts on the heavier end, you know, there's not a lot to choose between them in relationship to efficiency, fuel efficiency, and other thing that goes with it. So realistically, I suppose the driver is the link between saving fuel and not saving fuel, I suppose.
They are indeed. They're absolutely vital to it, and we've been on a journey over the last 4 years in terms of telematics and really embedding those processes and those procedures and those savings and efficiencies with drivers, and getting the best out of the vehicle is absolutely critical. Proactively engage with our drivers, talk to them about feedback. The telematics allows for some very structured conversations that allow us to deep dive into their journey for that particular day, at the end of the day, upon debrief. So, you know, they're hopefully driving more safely, more fuel efficiently, in a more relaxed manner for them. It's a bonus for the driver and good for us as well.
Tell me about the sort of telematics they use. Who do you sort of buddy up with for that?
So we use Microlise across all of our fleet.
Okay.
So that's fitted consistently across all of our fleet and has been for 4 to 5 years. We've got a very, very, very strong partnership with Microlise and worked closely with them around various initiatives. And we're pushing forward to take that to the next level next year with some further investment into additional technology, additional sensors, cameras, and essentially making sure that we comply with direct vision standard, but equally giving more support to the driver and making their job easier from a manoeuvring perspective.
Because telematics is one of those things, it can be seen as, it can either be stick or carrot, can't it? You know, you can really, depending on how you use and process that information, you can really, really punish the driver, if I'm going to use an aggressive word, for not performing as best as that particular driver could. But I would imagine your perspective, your take on it is very, very much the other way around. It's trying to make obviously there's a direct fuel benefits and I suppose it's not just fuel, it's driving standards, isn't it? So we start reducing in road traffic accidents and all the other bits and pieces that go with it, but ensuring the driver's getting a better working environment to boot as well.
Absolutely. It really is about winning hearts and minds, and that you know, it is something that's taken some time to embed into the business and into the culture, but is absolutely where we have got to. They proactively are engaged by it. majority of drivers have got the app on their phone so they can get access to their real-time scores. They really do take pride in it, and it does become competitive to a degree.
Yeah, healthy competition. I mean, what sort of improvements have you seen? I mean, is it sort of percentages you've seen or standard, you know, improving in standards, reduction in cost? Just talk us through that, Adam.
Yeah, so we've seen fuel efficiency improvements year on year, and we've seen over the last 3 years upwards of 5% fuel efficiency benefit. And we've certainly seen our driver grades continually, so that the grading that they get from the microlite system have been improving year on year on year. So every single year we've managed to keep improving. It's getting more difficult because we were certainly plateauing, but we have made some absolutely huge improvements over recent years. And it's fantastic to see drivers are really engaged with it.
Yeah. Because I know. I mean, I picked this up from one of the press releases or one of the news stories. But you know, you strive to be very much an employer of choice. I think they're the words you use. Is that right?
At the end of the day, anybody can go out and buy some vehicles and operate some vehicles and some warehouses. The real differentiator is the people, and that is absolutely part of our core culture of the business. Our people are core to what we do. And we work really, really hard to engage with people, to drive the right behaviours, to live by our values. And that is absolutely about engagement and getting feedback. It has to be two-way. In relation to drivers, they're the frontline facing, customer-facing people. And they have the most fantastic ideas, and you have to tap into that. You can't be naive enough to try and think you know everything. There is a huge resource out there. Tapping into it is really beneficial. And equally, we can have some really positive impacts on their lives and their work lives just by making subtle changes that, in many cases, it's the most simple ideas that have the biggest difference.
No, it's a really, really valid point. Is that? I mean, obviously, operators listening to the drivers, and I dare say, the sort of driver engagement across the industry, probably being polite, is maybe varied dependent on the operator that's sort of under the microscope. But have you got sort of an instance or a couple of instances of where the drivers have come to you with ideas, and you've thought, my God, why didn't we think of that? Is there anything that comes to mind?
It's the most simple things, and just the relocation of safety devices, making things different. The most obvious thing sometimes when you're specifying new assets, you're looking at what you're going to order and whether it's a certain curtain buckle that really causes frustration and absolutely does the job. But the most simplest of changes is something as simple as, why don't you have these curtain buckles instead of those curtain buckles? Can make a huge difference. And certainly pre-COVID, we were doing through my team and the technical engineering team, going around all of our sites, just kind of really open door type sessions, inviting drivers to come in, just come have a cup of coffee, have a donut, have a chat, and put the world to rights. And you pick up the most meaningful conversations and the best feedback in terms of things that can make their lives easier.
Yeah, no, I think I think sometimes the drivers can be the forgotten heroes in all this, you know, because with particularly what's been going over the last, well, since earlier in the year, you know, from March when we had locked out the first lockdown, you know, the road transport industry really did come to the fore, and I think people actually realised, particularly when we saw shortages of common items on the shelves, but actually put a proper value into the logistics industry, distribution industry, and the drivers were getting sort of front and centre of what was going on, and were regarded as key workers, and I think really, really raised the profile for the better of the road transport industry. It sort of gave it a proper value. Would you say you've had similar feedback?
Absolutely. You know, we really did recognise that, you know, many of our, particularly in the early days when it was very new and there was clearly lots of uncertainty around COVID and our people did go above and beyond, were absolutely phenomenal in what they did. And I think there was definitely a change in mindset from the general public and people who probably didn't have an insight into logistics and distribution. And I think that was really positive. And it's key that we try and maintain that, that we keep talking about the good things that we do, share the, you know, the things that as an industry that we're working on and doing differently and becoming more efficient. And undoubtedly there is an increasing driver shortage.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, obviously the age profile of the driver is, well, it's out of kilter with where it should be. Is it, I mean, I don't, have you got the numbers? Is it 53, 54, something like that, the average age? I picked up some stats somewhere a while ago. I don't know if that's right, but whichever way it is, it's too old. And I think, let's talk about from Bibby's perspective in the first part, and then in the second part, the general, you know, the industry in general. In order to incentivize people to come and work with you, I mean, what how do you do it? How do you engage?
It's very kind of very much a multifaceted process, really. It's about the whole package. We want to be recognised as an employer that people want to come and work for. There is a huge amount of interaction between drivers and drivers that work for different businesses, and it's quite interesting how messages cascade through drivers. And definitely put positive news in, as you say, the talk from the truck stop is...
I was just going to say truck stop talk,
Definitely, without a doubt. So a lot of the positive things that we're doing in terms of engagement, talking to people, listening, making changes are really key. We need to clearly keep investing in the latest equipment, keep increasing specifications. We have to try and differentiate ourselves from our competitors ultimately.
Where's the untapped labour?
That is the key. And we're absolutely looking to tap into some of that. You know, it is very much a kind of an ageing workforce, very kind of male dominated. And we need to be more flexible, and we're proactively trying to be more flexible as an employer that can we attract people from different demographics, from different sectors? Can we be more flexible in shifts? Can we find a short shift that might fit somebody who's got, you know, children they have to care for in the evening and want shorter shifts? We've got to be more flexible and move away from the days of really long hours, early starts, late finishes.
Monday morning, back on Saturday morning and all those sorts of things.
Exactly. We have to embrace that change and try and do things differently if we're going to attract a more diverse workforce. And we're really keen that we do that. And we've actively got it as a business target to try and increase our diversity. And it's a challenge, and it's difficult to get young people into the industry. And we have to find more and more incentives to be able to bring them in, train them internally.
It's not an attractive industry, is it? I mean, we know it is, but to the outside world, it's not. You know, it's. I'm hoping the sort of good to come out of the pandemic is that, as I just said earlier, that people have realised there is a proper value to logistics and the people that work in there. But to the out, generally, it's not really something you think about, and certainly you wouldn't consider as a profession. And I also think there's certain other countries in Europe that do very much hold the driver in very, very high regard as a professional. And it just seems that the perception of the British truck driver is not aligned to that of, let's say, a driver in Germany or a driver in France or somewhere like that.
I would absolutely agree. And I think we are making some progress. And I think you're right that COVID has helped in terms of an awareness to a degree. But we have to really keep working hard as an industry in terms of changing that perception further. There's a whole raft of things that we need to do. We're trying to engage with schools, with and just trying to share the things that we do. As you say, it's becoming more and more technology-based. There is more technology. There is a lot more that's required of a driver. That it's not just about driving. It's the whole infrastructure piece. And electronic PODs and kind of all of those sorts of things that they're expected to manage and work with as well.
Yeah.
And equally, we need to look at facilities that are out there for drivers. There is still a difference between what you see on the continent and what we have in the UK. And I think that's something that government needs to look at to try and keep pushing facilities for drivers as well. And
I think we work very, very closely with the truck stop network, as I suppose describes it as a group, if you will. And some of them are so on the front foot, investing very, very heavily on, you know, facilities, showers, food, good quality food, and then others just seem to have been left behind. And you know, as a driver, to be able to sort of, one, be able to use the loo, you know, if you're away for overnight, a decent shower, it's not a big ask, is it? But there just seem to be some areas where... Or some...
Absolutely, there's definitely a lack there. As you say, there are some really great ones out there that are doing some fantastic work, but we just need more of them. And parking in generally, secure parking, access to showers and food, and really what is the basic necessities that a driver needs whilst they're away. Absolutely.
I mean, I know the truck. I mean, through our magazine CV Driver, we're lucky enough to sort of travel the world looking at the new trucks and driving new trucks and these things. I mean, they are extremely advanced. They're very, you know. I mean, I was out in Bilbao earlier this year with driving the new MAN, and it's like you've been in a spaceship. And what's even when you get people that have never been in a truck before, you actually get them in the cab. They are in total of awe of what's going on. It's a proper wow factor. But it just seems to be that we're just not getting to the people that we really should be, that would, you know, remove this age profile or kick it down the road a little bit, just to be able to, you know, get, as I said, I think it's a new set of people, isn't it, that we need. It's not a matter of switching from one operator to another operator for another 50 pence an hour or whatever it is. It is going after a completely new, I think the word you use, demographic, an untapped driver market.
Absolutely is. It is a completely different job to what it would have been 15, 20 years ago. And as you say, the technology that's now there, and we... It is a really, really skilled job, and we need to get that message out there that it has changed so dramatically, and it is absolutely possible for anybody to do that job. And you know, we are really trying to encourage how we can train people up, what we can look to do internally, how we can try and bring new people into the industry, warehouse to wheels, where we bring some of our warehouse operatives through into their HGV licenses. And it's we have to just be more and more creative in terms of how we can attract those people, because they are absolutely the differentiator between a successful business and a non-successful business.
How many drivers do you employ, Adam?
So we currently employ around about 900 drivers.
And then obviously agency as and when you need, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Agency are obviously necessary in terms of supporting fluctuations in volume and holiday cover and those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I suppose for people that don't know the Bibby distribution operation in any great detail, how many sites do we work from nationally?
So we're operating at across 45 different sites across the UK. So that's spread across mainland UK and up into Scotland. We've got clearly some which are our own flagship sites, through to some smaller sites and some where we're based on customers' locations.
And what's going on? I mean, obviously, we normally see a massive sort of uptick in vehicle movements coming up to Christmas. Is there any sign of that yet? Because Christmas is going to be really strange this year, though, isn't it?
It's going to be very, very strange. It's definitely a different dynamic. We've seen we work quite heavily in high cube is kind of an area that we specialise in. So there's lots of high cube volumes, and most of that is primary packaging. So quite a lot of cardboard, food can, beverage can, and then through into the retail sector. And we're absolutely seeing those volumes increasing fairly dramatically. I think the retailers are seeing a shift to clearly online. And that impact of COVID has definitely definitely triggered that, and I think that is here to stay.
Yeah, I mean, it has been sort of a current theme of the podcast, very much as how online shopping has really sort of altered, again, the logistics operation. But I've said it time and time again. You know, it was something we were forced into, whether you choose to do online shopping or not. And we've realised we actually quite like it. And, you know, hopefully we are living in the new normal. But I think it's very much, very much here to stay. And I think people have still got to eat, still got to drink, still got to wear clothes. And we spoke about earlier in the conversation, the sort of last mile thing. You know, the fear has gone out of online shopping. So you can, you know, buy a couple of shirts and buy a bigger one and buy a smaller one and just, you know, if the one you don't like, you leave it hanging on the door handle outside or on your doorstep, and lo and behold, somebody comes up, picks up and takes it away again, and you get your money back. It works, doesn't it? It works.
It absolutely does work, and it's a great example of where, you know, some of the things that have changed around COVID. So you've got contactless deliveries now, and people will leave it on your doorstep, and, you know, the days when somebody would turn up and there was nobody there to sign for it and they'd take it away have gone, and it's made it easier to transact. And I think, as you say, it's made it easier for the end user, and that there is definitely no way that it's going to go back to where it was before. It's definitely forced change, it's forced digitization, and it becomes more and more convenient for the consumer.
Yeah. I'm going to just chuck a bit of a curveball in here, because it's very much topical to where we are. I mean, obviously, over the last day or two, there's been an announcement that we're very, very close to receiving a vaccine for COVID. And all of a sudden now, yeah, we had the great news yesterday over the last day or so that there's a potential vaccine that's got a 90% success rate. But then when you sort of dig down into it, these vaccinations have got to be stored at minus 80 and can be... move something like three or four times before it starts losing. I've got a half-baked story, but basically where I'm going with it is, you know, they've made 40, well, we'll be hopefully making 40 million vaccinations available to the British people. How do we store it? Who's going to move it? Are you familiar enough with any sort of refrigeration businesses or I suppose what you call it? Processes that would allow this to happen.
It's absolutely going to be very specialist distribution, and it's certainly outside of the remit of kind of your standard refrigerated transport that is probably available in fairly large volumes. So it's going to be very niche, and it's quite interesting that, as you say, it's another great opportunity for logistics to shine.
Oh, absolutely, it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
It is, but it will be. I think it's going to be difficult to be able to deploy it in the scale and the size and the speed that is definitely going to be needed to distribute the vaccine. But it's great having the vaccine. But as you say, unless you can distribute it and get it to the end user, then it's less effective. So it's definitely going to be an opportunity for logistics.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, we saw the headline news, and then you start drilling down into it. And it's, I mean, I'm sure they'll work a way around it, but then you've got to sort of crystal ball gaze a little bit and says, hang on a minute, if we're going to transport this in, I don't know, I'm generalising, 20-foot refrigerated containers, is there enough 20-foot refrigerated containers to be able to get it? And if not, where do we get them before the other markets suck them up? You know, it's all these things in it that we start presenting itself. And again, we'll showcase logistics or distribution for exactly what it is, which is a fundamental part of where we are.
Absolutely, Will. And I think the one thing that we absolutely see, and this will be a prime example of it, is we have to be flexible. We have to be adaptable as an industry, and we have to change. We have to adapt really, really quickly. And I think it's going to be a great example of how the logistics industry works in terms of how they come up with we're doing those things.
Yeah, no, hopefully this is a few green shoots there that we can hopefully push this thing on and away out of our lives. One last question. We've done just over half an hour. But one last question. Again, I've used the phrase a few seconds ago about crystal ball glazing. Where do you think we're going to be? Where do you think the industry, road transport, logistics, whatever you want to call it, is going to be in 10 years' time? What we're going to be seeing? What's going to change?
I think it'll change dramatically. I think we're seeing the greatest rate of change that we've ever seen. I think technology is driving that. I think that it's going to definitely change beyond recognition in the next 10 years. And I think that a lot of that will be technology-led. Clearly, vehicle fueling will change. We know that the days of diesel as a fuel are numbered in any case. But I think that electric is definitely going to be, we're going to be driving around in electric vehicles using very, very different technology. The whole logistics supply chain will adapt, and things that are starting to emerge and kind of are on the periphery at the moment, drone deliveries, all those sorts of things, I think will absolutely come. I think it will be unrecognizable from where we are at the moment. And I think the rate of change is going to accelerate rapidly over the next 10 years. I think it's going to be a really interesting time to be in the industry and really challenge businesses in terms of how they can adapt and change and keep pace with the technology.
Yeah, we're in some very, very special times, aren't we? Very special times in what's coming on. Adam, it's been absolutely great speaking to you. I really, really thank you for your time. And on behalf of CV Focus and the ITTHub.net, thanks for your time. And I'm sure at some point, whether it be a show or an event or when we can get out and about, I'll give you the old knuckle butt or elbow bump or whatever we do. But again, Adam, thank you so much for your time.
No, you're welcome. It's been fantastic chatting, and hope to meet up in the future.